Good morning, everybody. Saturday morning, rainy Saturday morning on 94 WIP. I'm Glenn Macnow, joined by Mike Sielski. How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing wonderful, Glenn. How are you?
Nice. Doing nice. Big weekend for sports here. By the way, we expect to be on until 12:30, at which point we hand it off to Phillies baseball. Phillies against the Nats, the first part of a day-night doubleheader. Kind of iffy right now.
I think iffy is a kind way to describe the weather situation in this country right now.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens in Washington. You know what they should have done?
Tell me.
Did you watch the game yesterday?
Yes.
They had 26 people in the seats.
I've seen more people at Little League baseball games than were at that Phillies Nationals game yesterday.
You know how in the NFL, when the weather threatens a situation, they'll just move it to a different stadium?
Yeah, they should have done that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Somewhere, I don't know where. Some place where the skies are clear.
Yeah, anywhere. Throw it in a gymnasium for all we care. Just get the game in.
The big story this weekend, of course, is Eagles-Jags tomorrow. The return of Doug Peterson with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And you and I had an interesting talk yesterday. I want to start with that because you described this as a, quote, telltale game. Explain what that means and why.
So, to me, more than any other game the Eagles have played so far, this is going to give you a really good indication of how far they've come from last season. And here's why. We've discussed endlessly the fact that they performed poorly against really good quarterbacks last season, that they couldn't stop Tom Brady or Justin Herbert or Patrick Mahomes, et cetera, et cetera. So far this season, this is the matchup that comes as close to what they were dealing with and couldn't handle last year.
Mm-hmm.
In Doug Peterson, a head coach who knows how to coach offense, who is smart, who can scheme stuff up, and Trevor Lawrence, who I feel like is reminding people this season why he was the number one overall pick. It's like people forgot that this guy was supposed to be the number one prospect since Andrew Luck, since Peyton Manning, your favorite quarterback.
Well, last year it was the most disastrous situation you could imagine, going in with Urban Meyer, who may go down as the worst coach in the history of pro football, and they were 3-14 last year, and his rookie season was a disaster. I hear you. Doug comes in and kind of gets him back on track. He's looked very good through those three games. They had an impressive win against the Chargers last week. Chargers had a lot of injuries, but nonetheless. Okay.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a really good test. That's even more than, as much as we kind of looked forward to the Vikings game and Monday Night Football and Kirk Cousins and all of that, and even as impressive as they were last year in beating Carson Wentz, last week, excuse me, in beating Carson Wentz and Washington, this to me, they win convincingly Sunday, and okay, we can really talk about how good they can be.
All right, I'll give you another arrow for your quiver, and then I'll disagree with part of it. The other part of it that I think will be interesting tomorrow is Mike Caldwell is their defensive coordinator now. Mike Caldwell was with Tampa Bay last year when they beat the Eagles twice. Mike Caldwell has done very well against the Eagles offense. So the Jaguars are a team that is top 10 in the NFL in both offense and defense right now.
Yeah.
So we'll see. I don't know. The season is young. I don't think we really know who teams are yet. And it may include the Eagles a little bit, but with Jacksonville, a young team. And here's the thing where I think the Eagles will have an easier time of it. Ebb and flow. Jacksonville coming off a big, big win against the Chargers. Little full of themselves. Had to fly across the country to play out in L.A., fly back. I don't know what the weather was down there with the hurricane, but I imagine it was rough in Jacksonville. Mm-hmm. And then they have to fly here and play.
Circumstances are not in their favor.
Yeah, it's a little bit of a rough spot.
You could be right. I just, looking at it on paper, I think Trevor Lawrence is showing everybody who he really is as a quarterback.
A young quarterback, though. Still susceptible. Come on, Rich Gannon. Jonathan Gannon, he's all over this.
All of a sudden, you're the world's biggest Jonathan Gannon fan.
I am not, but we all have to be impressed with what they did last week against Washington, what they did against Minnesota, and the last two games, that defense has been exactly what you want it to be.
Exactly, especially in that first half last week. I mean, that was exactly what you would have thought would happen in harassing Wentz and forcing two fumbles and sacking him however many times they sacked him in the first half on the way to 9 in the game. It was exactly what you and Jonathan Gannon himself would want to see from that defense.
215-592-9494. By the way, best caller of the day gets a $50 gift card to Shy Vintage Sports, where there's a story in every stitch. Visit them in their Center City location or ShibeSports.com. All right, Mike, now I got a question for you. The Eagles are so much better than they were last year, so much better, I think, than we really expected them to be. Again, we're through three games, and, you know, the old axiom is that you look at the NFL season kind of four games at a time. I don't know where we work in the 17th game at this point, but
4.25
Yeah, four games in the first quarter of the next game. But,
yeah.
But I kind of believe that. So as excited as I am, I still want to see more. But Mike, oh God, I used to do this to Ray. I'm looking forward to the next 30 seconds. I haven't had the opportunity to do this for a while.
Let me get my yellow legal pad and my khaki pants ready.
Oh, I have a great Ray story. I'm gonna digress and tell you a great Ray story.
Okay.
So Ray's over in Great Britain. Ray and his wife are visiting
Big Ben,
Scott Wales, yeah, all that stuff, right?
Look, kids, Big Ben.
And when he comes back, he has he's going to be giving a speech. He's got some whatever. And he decided on the long flight, he wanted to write his thoughts out, you know, in his beautiful handwriting.
Mm-hmm.
And he realized that he packed his yellow legal pads in his suitcase and did not have access to it. So, I should post a photo. I have a photo of Ray Dinger's.
I want to guess. Can I guess?
Mm-hmm.
Because you have not told me the story yet. He didn't write the remarks on, like, the back of the doggy bag, did he?
They don't give you doggy bags on a plane, but what do they give you?
I'm trying to remember what it was.
Air sickness.
Bag. Yeah, there you go. Okay.
Yeah, okay. That's what you were thinking.
Yeah.
Yes. So doggy bag's a nice way to play.
He wrote his
speech
the vomit bag?
Yes. I'll tweet out the picture of it.
Oh, my gosh, right.
Anyway, yeah. Okay, so Mike Steelski.
Yes.
We agree the Eagles are way ahead of where we thought they would be so far.
Mm-hmm.
This is a better team than we were expecting. Mike, there is one and only one correct answer to the reason why the Eagles are so much better than we anticipated them to be. Mike, can you tell me the correct answer?
All right. So I wrote this at the beginning of the season, that the offensive line, first and foremost, is the reason to think they're going to be good. But the offensive line was terrific last season, and they were a 9-8 team.
We knew that.
So to me, this is me just guessing the way you're thinking, I would argue the addition of A.J. Brown and the wide receivers.
Mike, you are absolutely correct.
Oh, look at me.
I read a piece in, of all places, your old paper, the Wall Street Journal, this week.
Yes, yes, yes.
And thanks to David Cade for sending it to me, the guy who emailed it to me, and that bastion of sports coverage. And it basically, it was comparing the Eagles and the Dolphins. This is before Thursday night when Tua got knocked out. But the Dolphins similarly have been a better team, and it's because they have this explosive passing game all of a sudden. And like the Eagles, they invested heavily in bringing in a new wide receiver. For the Eagles, of course, it's A.J. Brown, and the passing game went from being a liability to a strength. Hurts is averaging 9.4 yards a throw.
Yes.
An attempt. The receivers are averaging 14.9 yards per reception. They were the most run-heavy offense in the league last year. They made a very, and this is, you know, listen, this is Howie.
Mm-hmm.
They made this conscious decision, we're going to trade our first-round pick to get A.J. Brown. This is after they spent their first-round pick last year on Devontae Smith. They're throwing all their chips into wide receiver, and it's the unstoppable A.J. Brown.
It's interesting for a couple of reasons. Number one, it's such a departure from the way they used to think, right? Like Howie grew up as a player personnel guy at Andy Reid's knee and Joe Banner's knee. And what was their philosophy?
If I may say it. Wide receivers are irrelevant.
Exactly. Exactly. We can have James Thrash and Todd Pinkston and Charles Johnson and Torrance Small because what matters is the quarterback and the offensive line.
Give me the shakes here, Mike.
Yeah, sorry. We go in the way back machine for those names. But the reverse is true now. I mean, the sport has changed. The offense has opened up because of rule changes and things like that. And this is true around the league. You see teams more and more spending either high draft picks or a lot of money under the salary cap to go get game-breaking wide receivers. And the Eagles are following suit, and it's working.
Right. Dolphins go out and get Tyreek Hill. after they have Jalen Waddle draft first last year. Mm-hmm. Eagles kind of do a very similar thing. These two teams are two very good teams this year. I don't really want to focus on the Dolphins too much, but A.J. Brown had 224 yards in the first 2 weeks, added 85 last week. Devontae Smith, 8 catches, 169 yards. You can't stop them.
No,
and then you had Quez Watkins and you had Dallas Goedert, and you can't cover them.
And they're throwing to Zach Pascal on third down.
Right, Zach Pascal, right.
You know,
pretty good.
And to me, Devontae is the interesting factor in that. And you saw it last week against Washington, where an opposing defense has to, absolutely has to, put its second best cornerback on Devontae Smith. And that makes all the difference mm-hmm. in the world. It
yep.
really does.
And I think it's something we really can look forward to. And it has taken the position of quarterback from something that was very iffy before the season, I don't know if Hurts can do it, and put him in the position where he can succeed.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was spending time with friends last night, and we were discussing this over a few drinks and food and things like that, and it became that chicken or egg debate question. You know, is it Hurts or is it the pieces around him? And what we're seeing, I think, is that under certain conditions, Jalen Hurts can be an incredibly productive quarterback in this league. Going forward, I think the question is, can the Eagles continue to create these kind of ideal conditions around them? That's an open question, because they're eventually, and it's becoming clearer and clearer, they're going to have to pay him him here.
Well, we will get into that certainly as the season progresses. Let me sneak in a call here, and then I want to talk about the return of Doug Peterson. Chris in Clinton, New Jersey, what's on your mind, Chris?
Hey, guys, how are you doing?
All right.
Hey, Chris.
One quick aside to start. Glenn, I was really excited to do the Last Man Standing poll this year. I always forget week one. And, of course, I got knocked out right away because the Niners couldn't take care of the Bears.
Yeah, that one took out a lot of people. That's good. I'm not involved in it anymore, but I'm glad they're still doing it and that you're in for a week. Anyway,
yeah.
What are you thinking about today?
I mean, I wanted to talk about the run defense against the Jags, but just to continue talking about the wide receivers, they're two different types of elite receivers. You know, A.J. Brown looks like Leonard Weaver out there when he's trying to get tackled by defensive backs, carrying them as an excellent protection receiver.
Talk about a throwback reference.
I thought Torrance Small was a great pull, and Chris is coming out with Leonard Weaver. That's awesome.
Well, so, I mean, I wish Leonard Weaver was around for longer. He got injured quickly. Yeah. He's the last fullback we had, you know?
I love a good fullback. Love a good fullback.
Well, anyway, and Devontae Smith, I mean, I don't care that he didn't get his foot down. That catch along the sidelines was one of the best things I've seen by an Eagles receiver in years, you know? So they're two different types of elite on the outside, and it is the reason that this offense looks different. But for tomorrow, I'm a little bit concerned about the run defense against James Robinson as kind of a bigger back, and then Etienne as a receiving back out of the backfield. I know that they didn't have great run defense against the Lions week one, and then last week I thought Antonio Gibson had a few good runs, and then Carson Wentz would just ruin the drive right after that. So I wanted to get your thoughts there.
Yeah, look, I think Doug Peterson is still Doug Peterson, and when push comes to shove, he's going to want to throw the ball. And while Robinson and Etienne, as you said, are really good backs and have been productive so far through the first three games, I think Doug is Doug, and he's going to put the ball in the hands of Trevor Lawrence, and that's what this game is going to come down to.
Be interesting to see how the weather affects that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a good point.
And a lot of coaches, it's like, I don't care if it's raining and 30-mile-an-hour gales, we're still throwing it, but sometimes that does push you toward the run. Speaking of Doug, he comes back tomorrow. I don't know why I said next year. He comes back tomorrow.
That would be breaking news.
Yeah, no, he comes back tomorrow, and he got hired to bring a horrible team to respectability. They have double-digit losses in 10 of their last 11 seasons.
That's amazing.
They've been awful. There's been a lot of talk this week, what kind of reception is he going to get? Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk,
yeah.
Right, okay, who I've generally respected, said they're going to boo him.
Nobody's
going to boo him.
No, there's absolutely no chance that he gets booed. He's going to get a standing ovation, and he will deserve it because he is the only Super Bowl win coach in this franchise's history. He was publicly, at least, and privately often, a very amiable, good guy.
Mm-hmm.
People liked him. he ran the Philly special. I mean, let's be honest here. This is Doug Peterson is one of the all-time heroes in Philadelphia sports, and I think people are going to treat him accordingly tomorrow.
I think so too. And you talked about his relationship with the fans was great. His relationship with the players was great. Travis Kelce was on with the morning show.
Jason Kelce.
I don't know what I'm doing today. Jason Kelce was on with the morning show earlier this week and talked about how Doug listened to Foles, how Doug was flexible, how this is the essence of Doug Peterson. Let's play that.
Doug was awesome, man. The biggest thing that I really loved about Doug was he really empowered his players. I don't know many coaches on fourth down in the Super Bowl, but Nick Foles comes up to him and asks him to run a trick play. He's like, you know what? Yeah, let's do it. You know, that was kind of who he was. And that was one of his biggest strengths. And I really appreciate Doug for being that guy when he was here. And you see it already happening in Jacksonville.
I think that's great. And I think it's so accurate.
I do too. And the other aspect of Doug that makes him lovable, I guess you'd say, to Philadelphia fans is that there's an underdog quality to him, right? He had never been a head coach before.
Mm-hmm.
He was replacing Chip Kelly, who was supposed to be this genius. And, oh, Doug is only coming in because he's someone who Jeffrey Lurie and Howie Roseman can control. And in this one season, he unfurls a coaching performance that is as good or better than any in this town's sports history. It just is. The reason they win that Super Bowl, to me, has always been the way Doug coached that team the entire season. They were ready for that moment
mm-hmm.
because of how daring they had been.
Fearless.
You know, throughout the entire year.
Fearless. And, you know, I remember when it's fourth and one at the end of the first half, and I'm not going to put this on Merrill because I think we were all kind of this way. Like, I don't know, you know, it's mm-hmm. a good time to go for that field goal, go into the locker room with those points. And most coaches, I think, against Belichick
mm-hmm.
are going to get too conservative. And Doug, hey, big balls, man.
Yeah. That's it, Glenn. That's the way an opposing team, when you're facing the Patriots in a Super Bowl, that's the way you have to play. And that's the way you have to coach. And the Eagles were ready for that moment because they had played and coached that way the entirety of that season.
I think that's a great point. And I think the other part of it is kind of what Kelce was referring to, which is as ballsy as he was, Doug also had humility mm-hmm. in that he would listen to the other coaches.
Yep.
He would listen to his players. He was open to Nick Foles saying, hey, this crazy play that we've been doing in practice, mm-hmm. let's run this in the Super Bowl. Most NFL coaches, Mike, I'm going to break news to you here. You probably don't know this. Most NFL coaches don't have a lot of humility. Don't know if you've ever dealt with any of them before in your life.
I don't know what you're talking about,
Glenn. Tried to ask a question in a news conference and gotten that look that we've all gotten in news conferences.
The Jim Mora, you don't know. You think you know, but you don't know.
Most of those guys, and great, you know, from the great ones like Belichick and mm-hmm. Parcells and so on, to the ones who aren't great, like Kotite.
Yeah.
They have a general haughtiness toward everyone. And I'm not really just talking about the media, although the media is in there.
Mm-hmm.
Doug had humility. Doug was a guy, which, by the way, I think Nick's the same way.
Yeah, I do too. And
it serves him well.
It does, especially in the modern athlete and the modern state of sports nowadays. I think it's harder and harder for any coach in any pro sport to be the taskmaster that we like to think, or some of us like to think, a coach has to be. You see a team that isn't disciplined and you say to yourself, oh, well, is the coach being tough enough on his team? Is he demanding more of his team? You know, nowadays, with money that these players make, with their backgrounds, immersing themselves in the sport from the time they're little kids, being that kind of hardcore coach doesn't necessarily resonate anymore. You've got to have credibility. And the way you build credibility often with the modern athlete nowadays is by saying, yeah, I feel where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I understand what you're going through, and here's how we can work together to make this work for the entire team.
And just being a human being.
Yeah.
NFL coaches have odd lives. They live in their office. They don't, I mean, you know, we've all talked to them from Vermeil. I remember I once did a profile on Joe Gibbs when mm-hmm. he was coaching Washington. And Joe Gibbs used to basically have his PR guy or whatever drive to his house each week and get a cassette tape of his wife telling him what he was missing in the house and play it on the car as he was driving around practice. And that was how he kept in touch with his family.
Yeah, yeah. The old story that Vermeil would always tell about the fireworks going off in 1976 during the bicentennial.
What is this about?
Yeah, tell him to turn it off. Right. Like,
yes.
Dick, it's the 200th birthday of the country.
Right. Doug's a guy. Doug's a regular guy, and I appreciate him for that. One last thing about Doug. We'll take the first break. 215-592-9494. Best caller of the day gets a $50 gift card to Scheib Gift Sports, or Scheib Vintage Sports. Doug was asked this week, I think your colleague Jeff McClain asked him, what does he think of the statue of him and Foles at the stadium?
Mm-hmm.
And he said, never seen it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You buying that?
If there was a statue
of Mike Sielski somewhere, don't you think you'd like stop by and take like...
I would steal it and put it in the foyer of my house. Do I think he's never seen it? I'm sure he has seen it. Whether he's actually been to the statue and been a foot away from it and marveled at it up close,
I don't mean a photograph. I'm sure you saw a photograph as they were putting it up, but there's a statue of him at the stadium.
Yeah.
He was there. He was coaching the team when that statue went up. Never walked by and said, they made my nose a little
bit. He may be fudging the truth a little bit. But the fact that he, let me put it this way, Glenn, the fact that he would say, I've never seen it, tells you a little something about him, even if he has.
Yeah, it does. All right, 215-592-9494. Mike Sielski, Glenn Mack now. Phillies, Washington, coming up at 1 o'clock today. We will keep you kind of apprised as to whether that game's going on. Oh, coming up, my least favorite part of the show.
My favorite part of the show.
Yeah, what are we doing?
Could it be reviewing the status of our stupid football bet?
Indeed it is. WIP Sports Time is 10:22. He's Mike Sielski. I'm Glenn Mack now. Mike, let us go back to 1 week ago today. Eagles against the Washingtons. 4 minutes into the second quarter. Eagles already up 10-0. Feeling good about it. Tress Way lines up to punt.
Way takes the snap. The left footer gets it away. Covey backs up. Now he comes forward. And he muffs it. Now picks it up. And they bury him inside the five. The ball seemed to tail off at the end. And he muffed it, but he saved it. He went back and picked it up.
All right. We don't need that. You know what? What's tailing off?
You and this stupid football.
Yes! Game. My opportunity to win dinner from you. For those who know, Mike Sielski and I made our stupid football bet in honor of Ray Dinger and my stupid football bets over the last 20 years. And I set the term, so I cannot complain about what's going on here. Do you have it like you can say quickly off the top of your head? Because there's a lot of components.
Yeah, there's a lot of components to it. Basically, it comes down to this. Anytime the Eagles do something poorly in the return game, it's good for me.
Yeah.
And anytime they do something good, it's good for you.
That was a good summation. And in fact, you're up 5-1.
Yeah.
Every 3 weeks, you're up 5-1.
This is a Harlem Globetrotters, Washington Generals kind of situation here, I feel like.
This may be that Little League game that gets called in the third inning.
Although, I will say that Michael Clay, the Eagles special teams coordinator, wants to keep you in the game here.
Oh, he does, he?
Because look at what happened last week.
All right. Well, let's get to that in a second.
Sure.
Let's get to that in a second. By the way, the bet is dinner for you and me and a couple of our producers.
Yep.
Basically, it's going to be the producers who work our show the most between now and then. So, Kyle Quinn, incentive for you. There you go. But I'll tell you what, Mike.
Okay.
If you want to call the bet right now, right now, I'll take you to dinner at the fast food place of your choice right now.
I want to, what would be the classy way to put this? Rub your nose in it.
Yeah, well.
So, no, we are going to go all 17 weeks with this.
All right, Dylan Covey is horrible.
Britton Covey.
Britton Covey.
Dylan Covey, Britton Covey, whatever his name is.
Boy, I've done that 3 times already today.
That's okay.
Didn't get a lot of sleep last night. Excuse me.
No worries, Steve.
Britton Covey is horrible so far. Just looks terrible and is running into tackles, getting killed. He's handling excuse me, the majority reps at punt return. But yes, you kind of teased it. So last week, Eagles special teams coordinator decided, maybe we'll try something else.
Yeah, and what he's trying is Devontae Smith. as a punt returner, which to me speaks to how much of a concern this is becoming for them, that you would take one of your two best wide receivers, one of your best playmakers, most dynamic players, and put him back there as a punt returner. Because there is some risk there, right? He could get hit. He could get hurt. It increases the likelihood that something not so great happens. He didn't have a lot of experience with it, at least in the NFL in his brief career.
You try not to have your Pro Bowl players back there, particularly if they weigh about 165
exactly.
pounds.
Yeah, exactly. Sure. So, but it does speak to them looking at this and saying, this is something we got to fix.
And it is something that they have to fix because, as great as the offense has been so far, we talked about how unstoppable the passing game is, and I believe in the running game. I know they had a bad game against Washington, but the running game's great. Offensive line is great. Defense has been a revelation the last couple of weeks. The secondary is incredible. Slay and Bradbury are number one and number two right now in quarterback rating against.
Yes.
In the league.
Yeah.
Of all cornerbacks. Special teams is awful. They had the field goal block the other day. Nice work by Aaron Sippas making the tackle.
Yeah.
And he hasn't hurt you yet, but we saw him last year. I don't have faith in the punter.
No. Yeah. I mean, it is the weakness of this team, yes.
The Eagles are averaging, this is kickoff returns. The Eagles' opponents are averaging 24 yards a return, which is a lot these days. The Eagles are averaging 10.2 yards a kickoff return.
Yeah. And some, now, in fairness, I'm not saying their special teams have been good. In fairness, some of that is kind of these, not squib kicks, whatever you call them,
like
mortar kicks that Vikings are using against them. But you got to be ready for this. Yeah, you got to be ready for this.
You know, and other teams see that works until you can prove that you get past that. This is the thing that worries me about the Eagles. And it's not keeping me up at night, but it is something. Special teams was bad last year. It was bad.
Mm-hmm.
Not good this year.
No, and it's made worse for the fact that Eagles fans know this. Over time, the Eagles have generally had really good special teams. You're talking about Dave Phipp. You're talking about John Harbaugh back in the day. It was always a strength.
You're not putting Danny Smith in there, are you?
No, I'm not.
Okay. Big wad of gum.
Yeah. But it was always a strength. It was a place in the past.
You mentioned Harbaugh? I didn't hear.
I did, yes.
Yeah, okay, Harbaugh.
Yeah, it made a difference for this team. And you had guys like Brian Mitchell and Darren Sproles and dynamic players who made a difference on that little side of the ball. And you're seeing the difference now when it's not good.
Other than Jake Elliott, the special teams has been very subpar so far last year and this year. Can't have it.
This is,
and
this
I'm going to lose the bet, which is the more important part.
Well, that's,
Super Bowl be damned.
That's on you.
I don't want to be buying you dinner.
This to me is the most Philadelphia football conversation we could possibly have. The Eagles are the last unbeaten team in the NFL,
I know.
We're spending 7 minutes going over their special teams.
Two reasons. One, it could bite you in the butt down the road.
True.
Two, I'm going to have to take out my wallet.
Your butt is already bitten.
Yeah, it seems that way, doesn't it? All right, John in Manayunk is with us. John, what's your thoughts?
Glenn, still looking forward to trying that Merrill & Mike beer at Conshohocken Brewing Company. Hope there's still some left.
It is out there. We're going to have it out through the entire football season. Proceeds go to charity, First Tee of Greater Philadelphia, and Mike Sielski will give you an unpressured endorsement right now.
I endorse all of Conshohocken Brewing Company's products. Big fan of their Pilsner, the Ring the Bell Pilsner, and the Merrill & Mike beer is excellent.
Oh, okay.
Thank
Great.
You.
I like the old Type A IPA, the classic, but they're all good.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah. But on the so Glenn, you doing the pregame show tomorrow?
We are. And by the way, the Eagles alumni guest tomorrow at the tent at noon, Chris Long.
Good guess.
That's a good one.
Yeah, there's one thing I'm looking forward to see. I know you're not going to be on the field, but pregame, I was hoping they would do something for Doug, like some kind of montage on the Jumbotron.
So here's what I expect, because I don't think you do it pregame. I'm trying to remember what they did for Andy, and I don't remember, or what they did when Dawkins came back. That was a little different because there was bad blood there.
Mm-hmm.
But to me, the first time out, as you go to commercial or during the commercial, you put up Doug on the scoreboard, you show the Philly special or some other things, you know, Doug on the sidelines with the Eagles, thank you, Doug, standing ovation, and get it out of the way before it comes back from commercial. Does that make sense to you guys?
Absolutely. I think that's exactly how it should happen. I think it probably will happen that way. I would be surprised if they didn't do it exactly as you just described.
Yeah, pregame is tough because people aren't in their seats yet. And and again, you don't want to do it while the game is going on, so you do it in that first commercial break.
Yeah. Yeah, I know, but I think there's like, I know what you guys are saying, everyone here in Philly loves it, but I think there's some kind of bad blood between you because, like, basically, I think when Doug left, he basically, you know, said, take this job and shove it if you want me to make those changes. And you remember when Jeff Lurie, right after that season, he did like a post season review and he never mentioned Doug once. Yeah. So I don't know. There might be something there.
Yeah, I would be surprised if that still lingered, John, only because I don't think Doug looks at things that way. You know, he's such a laid back dude that I don't think he would be holding a grudge like that.
Yeah, I think they've all come to terms with it.
Yeah, I hope
it's worked
so,
out for everybody.
Correct. Well, hopefully Eagles win and Doug gets his tribute.
I think so. Right? There's no way they don't give him a tribute.
I can't imagine it. He's the only coach in their history to have won a Super Bowl. You have to acknowledge him. You have to give him his props.
I heard a debate this week on the Midday Show, and John Ritchie, and I think they had Jaws on, too.
Mm.
You know, both former players said, no, you don't do anything. If the fans want to do something, that's fine. But he's your opponent. You don't recognize your opponent. And I thought, yeah, you do.
Yeah, of course you do.
How's it going to impact the game? It's not, the Jags are going to be there like, oh, hey, they're giving a nice endorsement to Doug. Let's go out and get him.
No,
especially going to hurt you.
Especially because you have several significant players on the Eagles who played for Doug Peterson for a long time. So, of course, you would acknowledge him. I'm surprised that John and Jaws would feel that way.
I am as well. And so I posted on Twitter earlier this week. Of all, and I know Howard, I think, talked about this kind of thing a little bit today. Of all of the players who have come back, any sport, opposing uniforms, or coach, biggest applause reception. And I got two. And if you have another, please add it. To me, the two would be Dawkins. And the fans were really upset when he left. The Eagles screwed that one up and later admitted they screwed that. Banner said, yeah, I screwed it up. And Chase Utley.
Yeah. Yeah,
the Dodgers.
They, to me, are the two most beloved athletes of the last quarter century of Philadelphia sports, I think. And I'm not sure there's anybody else who's close. But Kelsey's, I mean, Kelsey's not a former athlete, but he's getting to that
point.
Yeah,
I get it.
I can't think of another one. I don't think Andy Reid, when he came back in 2013, brought that kind of love, you know, inspired that kind of love and reception from the fans because he had been there so long. He had never won a Super Bowl. They were just the Chiefs came back and played at the Link, literally Andy's first season there.
Yeah. So yeah, they were still start of the season,
right? And there was this residual. They had just gone 4-12. He was finally, in some people's eyes, fired. All of that stuff.
Yeah, and he got a good reception.
Yeah,
but not what we're talking about with the others. Same thing with Donovan. We came back with Washington. Everybody, oh, he's going to get booed. Donovan's going to get booed. He didn't get booed. He got cheered.
Right.
And anybody who thinks, oh, Doug Peterson's going to boot, are you out of your mind?
Yeah. It's the one thing. Look, I often point out occasions when Philadelphia fans and Philadelphia sports culture, you know, isn't at its best. But I think one of the things that the national perspective and media kind of miss about Philadelphia is how sentimental the fans are and how loyal they are if you have done right by them and their teams. And anybody who's saying that Doug Peterson is going to get a bad reception tomorrow doesn't understand the culture here.
Exit question for you. Will the national broadcasters, as this great reception for Doug comes, or in any of the pregame shows, tomorrow, the game's on Fox tomorrow, right?
Yeah.
Will it be mentioned at some point on Fox?
CBS, I think.
Is it on CBS tomorrow?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, because it's the Jags are an AFC team.
Right.
Okay. Will it be mentioned on CBS from their pregames through Doug's introduction? You know, these people threw snowballs at Santa.
I don't know if they'll make the Santa Claus snowball reference, the laziest, most ridiculous reference in all of Philadelphia sports.
Probably your grandfather, Mike, because it was 1968.
What do you mean? My grandfather threw snowballs at Santa?
Well, I mean, it was 54 years ago. My point is not specifically your grandfather. My point is that when people still make that reference,
yeah, that's what they're talking
about. The people
about.
Who did that are in their 70s and 80s
yeah,
now.
If that. Yeah, I think somebody will make a reference. I think there will be, because there are so many lazy
it'll happen.
Commenters, so to speak, on those national shows. Somebody will say it.
Yeah. 215-592-9494. We'll get your calls coming up, and we will celebrate a great, great moment in Philadelphia sports history. Hey, fall's upon us. It's that time of year again to consider replacing your old drafty windows and doors because another cold winter season is rolling in. Man, I felt it this morning, actually. When I need a company to help me with these home projects, I turn to the great people at Guided Door and Window. Act now. You receive 20% off all windows and doors, plus Guided will allow you to start your project today with no money out of pocket. Take up to 3 years to pay it off interest-free once that job is expertly installed. So here it is. You'll be able to start enjoying all the benefits of new, highly energy-efficient windows and doors, including an increased comfort level in your home, including lower monthly energy bills, and you take advantage of 20% savings, and you have the luxury of paying off your project with 0% interest for up to 36 months. Got to act now. Offers for a limited time only. Restrictions apply. For full details, call Guided today. Schedule a free, no obligation in-home estimate at 1-877-GO-GUIDA or visit them at goguida.com. That's go, G-U-I-D-A.com. Along with Mike Sielski, I'm Glenn Mack now. Rainy day in Philadelphia. No news out of Washington yet. I mean, as far as we know, they're going to try to get it in. You and I were looking at the weather report early. Kind of 50% chance of rain early afternoon. Then it gets worse, so they'll try to, as I think Scott Fransky likes to say, they'll try to get it in between the raindrops.
Yeah, I think there's as Kyle Quinn, our producer, said, there's a window of about 2 hours from 1 to 3, then, and they're going to have to try to play the game because rescheduling it is going to be a bear.
All right, time for This Week in Philadelphia Sports History, brought to you by Shive Vintage Sports, where there's a story in every stitch. Visit their new location in Wayne and Lancaster Avenues in downtown Wayne or at shivesports.com. Mike, on this week, the date was October 6th, this week in 2010, was the best pitched game I ever attended live.
Wow.
I'll put it to you that way. It was the opener of the National League Division Series postseason. Phillies at home against the Cincinnati Reds. Roy Halladay pitching, I believe, for his first postseason game of his life.
Yep.
After all those years in Toronto. Let's go right to the end.
Just about a quarter to eight, October the 6th, 2010. The first postseason game for Roy Halladay. He winds the 0-2. Swing and a dribbler out in front of the plate. Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time. And it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Halladay embrace. And the Phillies again celebrate around Roy Halladay.
All right, so much to unpack there. Let's start with the call, which is brilliant by Fransky.
Fransky always meets those moments, always.
Mm-hmm.
It's just great.
He sets up the time frame, which, by the way, the great Vin Scully, one of the best calls I ever heard is Vin Scully calling a Sandy Koufax no-hitter that I listened to when Vin Scully passed away recently, and he said, you know, just about a quarter after 8, October the 6th, he's giving you the moment in history. It's brilliant. L.A. stays out of the way, but can't quite control his joy at the end, which
is great. It's, again, something I love about listening to L.A. You hear a call like that or the call of the Jimmy Rollins double in the 2009 League Championship Series, and you can hear L.A. celebrating in the background, and it actually adds to the call.
Absolutely, it does. And that play by Ruiz was huge because he swings kind of the bat. It was, I'm trying to think of who the hitter was.
I think it was Brandon Phillips.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It was Brandon Phillips. And it's kind of like a weird, the ball kind of goes up there and he throws the bat and Ruiz has got to go out. He's got to sort out the bat from the ball. He's on his knees. Phillips could run.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to get it down to first and he does. Just a brilliant game, a brilliant moment.
Yeah, and what stands out about that play in particular was, of course, it's the last play of the game. And if you go back and watch all 27 outs, it is by far the most difficult play that a Phillies fielder had to make that day.
Yeah.
Halladay struck out 9 or 10, I forget.
He was ahead of everybody.
And the balls put in play were little jam shots and cans of corn.
There was one, it might have been Jay Bruce hit that Worth.
Yes, yes.
I almost said Wentz. That Worth had to make a tough catch
in right field,
but that was it.
Yeah, he was so dominant that day. I remember exactly where I was. I was working in New York at the time at the Wall Street Journal, and I was covering the division series between the Yankees and the Twins, and I was in the press box at Target Field in Minneapolis, and the entire press box was gathered around televisions watching this.
You know, it's so funny. That's when I, first of all, I was in the press box here right behind home plate. Mm. I had like the best seat in the house. But when Halliday threw the no-hitter against Miami.
Mm-hmm. The perfect game.
Perfect game. I was in Chicago because the Flyers were playing the Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup. And all of a sudden in the press box, everybody there is like, you know, starting to watch this.
So you brought up what I think is one of the fun trivia things, I guess you'd say, about that year, right? We talk all the time in Philadelphia about the lack of championships, right? The Phillies win in 2008. It's 25 years. It had been 25 years since Philadelphia had celebrated a championship. The Eagles win the Super Bowl in 2018 for the first time in their history. And if you look at 2010, you might say to yourself, well, gosh, the Phillies got to the finals and lost to the Blackhawks, and the Phillies were really good that season and lost to the Giants in the championship series.
Yeah, that hurt.
But think about what you saw. A Phillies pitcher threw a no-hitter in a playoff game.
Yep.
And the Flyers came back from a 3-0 deficit in the second round to beat the Bruins.
Yeah.
Those are monumental events
sports. You're right.
And
the Flyers being in the final that year was a little bit of a shocker.
It was. It was.
And the finals were disappointing. The way the finals ended with stinking late. And God, I still hate that guy.
Yeah, not good.
Never liked that guy.
They lost to a better team, though. They did.
The Phillies, I thought, were going to win it again that year. The loss to San Francisco was very disappointing.
Yes.
But you're right. Sports was a blast.
It was. And, you know, you can sometimes lament what you don't have and miss what you did get to experience.
Yeah.
And those are pretty two pretty cool things.
Anyway, Halliday was so good. He was.
Yeah.
We only had him.
Those two seasons,
right.
2010 and 2011, man. And you think about that game he pitched in 2011 against the Cardinals, where he allows the first inning run in game five and shuts them down the rest of the way and walks off the mound the losing pitcher. Anyway.
Rafael Furcal. First inning.
I wish all of you listening could see the face that Glenn just made.
That hurt. And by the way, what would he go? 260, 270 innings a year?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. The last real
double
horse.
Digit. His complete games per season are now, I heard this recently. Do me a favor. Look up how many complete games there have been in the major leagues this year.
Okay. I will.
Because it is possible that he had more in a season than like an entire league has these days.
I'm looking it up as we
tell you what. I'll take a call while you look that up.
Okay,
it's our friend Mitchie Tools. Let us get Mitch. How you doing?
Good, gentlemen. I got to keep calling you every week. They're winning every week, and I love them tomorrow afternoon too. The Eagles.
Yeah, I feel good about it.
I tell you guys, it was almost like an old school game. 9 sacks we had. I mean, you know, we don't have to say anything bad about Rich Gannon anymore. My God, it just. You know,
I think Jonathan Gannon.
Are you talking about Jonathan Gannon?
I mean, Jonathan Gannon.
That's right. I did the same thing earlier. It's a natural mistake to make. Delaware County guy.
You know, I just, you know, wow. I mean, you know, but question. I mean, I don't want Hurts to run. If we keep getting these W's, he's got to just cool down a little bit. I've got to keep him healthy. That's the only thing in the back of my mind I'm thinking about. You know.
Boy, you'd need something to worry about, don't you?
Yeah.
Always have to have something to worry about. Yeah.
Yeah, but, look, I mean, Hurts running is such a weapon that you're not gonna see him not run. You're just not.
Yeah, and the way he does it, too, it's so effortless and like a butterfly, you know, just flying over these opponents and stuff like that, you know.
It's
Happy New Year, too.
Yes, thank you, Mitch. Same to you.
Thank you.
So,
bye,
buddy. Be well.
I've got the numbers here. Halliday actually didn't throw more than, this sounds crazy, 9 complete games in any one season.
Is that right? He never reached double digit?
No. And so 2020, which was the shortened season because of the pandemic, each team playing 60 games, there were still 14 complete games. So
then my whole thing. Then this year, there's got to be more than that.
Yeah, 20, but no, I mean,
35, sorry, by my count.
Yes.
35 this year. All right, how many do the Phillies have?
Oh, do they?
Two?
Have?
Three?
Noah Syndergaard has one. I do know that, but that's a phony one.
Because the shortened game.
Yeah, because of the five innings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Let me see here.
I know Nola's got one.
Yeah. No,
Nick Pivetta's got one.
Is that right?
Are we allowed to utter his name anymore?
Well.
No, he's got one for the Red Sox?
Right. Yeah.
Man, I've been watching him.
So here you go. The
awful recently.
The Phillies have 2 complete games all season, both by Aaron Nola.
Yeah. And then the one by Syndergaard, which is fake.
Yeah.
Yes. All right. Well, there you go.
So, yeah, it's look, to me...
Nonetheless, I miss Halliday.
I miss Halliday, and I miss element of the sport. That is something that baseball is missing.
And I believe in the next segment, we may be talking about that.
Sounds good to me.
That's a pretty good tease, because we're going to be doing what we're watching, and some of that relates to it. 215-592-9494. Check in with Mike Sealski and Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP. Hey, when you bring up banking, most business people roll their eyes. I get it. I can tell you Meridian Bank customers do not feel that way. Yeah, sure. Meridian business bankers, they do the loan thing. They offer guidance on making your business more successful. But Meridian also puts on great customer events. I've been to them, both educational and social. And they're a super group of people to be around. You want to put some fun in your business banking? Get started at meridianbanker.com. Along with Mike Sealski, I'm Glenn Mack now. Rainy day in Philadelphia. No news out of Washington yet. I mean, as far as we know, they're going to try to get it in. You and I were looking at the weather report early, kind of 50% chance of rain early afternoon. Then it gets worse, so they'll try to, I think Scott Fransky likes to say, they'll try to get it in between the raindrops.
Yeah, I think there's a, as Kyle Quinn, our producer, said, there's a window of about 2 hours from 1 to 3, then, and they're going to have to try to play the game because... rescheduling it is going to be a bear.
All right, time for This Week in Philadelphia Sports History, brought to you by Shy Vintage Sports, where there's a story in every stitch. Visit their new location in Wayne and Lancaster Avenues in downtown Wayne or at shybsports.com. Mike, on this week, the date was October 6th, this week in 2010, was the best pitched game I ever attended live.
Wow.
I'll put it to you that way. It was the opener of the National League Division Series postseason. Phillies at home against the Cincinnati Reds. Roy Halladay pitching, I believe, for his first postseason game of his life.
Yep.
After all those years in Toronto. Let's go right to the end.
Just about a quarter to eight, October the 6th, 2010. The first postseason game for Roy Halladay. He winds the 0-2. Swing and a dribbler out in front of the plate. Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees. It's in time, and it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Halladay embrace, and the Phillies again celebrate around Roy Halladay.
All right, so much to unpack there. Let's start with the call, which is brilliant by Fransky.
Fransky always meets those moments, always.
Mm-hmm.
It's just great.
He sets up the time frame, which, by the way, the great Vin Scully, one of the best calls I ever heard is Vin Scully calling a Sandy Koufax no-hitter that I listened to when Vin Scully passed away recently, and he said, you know, just about a quarter after 8, October the 6th, he's giving you the moment in history. It's brilliant. L.A. stays out of the way, but can't quite control his joy at the end, which is great.
It's, again, something I love about listening to L.A. You hear a call like that, or the call of the Jimmy Rollins double in the 2009 League Championship Series, and you can hear L.A. celebrating in the background,
yep.
And it actually adds to the call.
Absolutely, it does. And that play by Ruiz was huge because he swings kind of the bat. It was, I'm trying to think of who the hitter was.
I think it was Brandon Phillips.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right. It was Brandon Phillips. And it's kind of like a weird, the ball kind of goes up there and he throws the bat and Ruiz has got to go out. He's got to sort out the bat from the ball. He's on his knees. Phillips could run.
Mm-hmm.
He's got to get it down to first. And he does. Just a brilliant game, a brilliant moment.
Yeah. And what stands out about that play in particular was, of course, it's the last play of the game. And if you go back and watch all 27 outs, it is by far the most difficult play that a Phillies fielder had to make that day.
Yeah.
Halladay struck out 9 or 10, I forget.
He was ahead of everybody.
And the balls put in play were little jam shots and cans of corn.
There was one, it might have been Jay Bruce hit that Worth.
Yes.
I almost said Wentz. That Worth had to make a tough catch
in right field.
But that was it.
Yeah. He was so dominant that day. I remember exactly where I was. I was working in New York at the time at the Wall Street Journal. And I was covering the division series between the Yankees and the Twins. And I was in the press box at Target Field in Minneapolis. And the entire press box was gathered around televisions watching this.
You know, it's so funny. That's when I, first of all, I was in the press box here right behind home plate.
Mm.
I had like the best seat in the house. But when Halliday threw the no-hitter against Miami,
the perfect game,
I was in Chicago because the Flyers were playing the Blackhawks in the Stanley Cup, and all of a sudden in the press box, everybody there is like, you know, starting to watch this.
So you brought up what I think is one of the fun trivia things, I guess you'd say, about that year, right? We talk all the time in Philadelphia about the lack of championships, right? The Phillies win in 2008. It's 25 years. It had been 25 years since Philadelphia had celebrated a championship. The Eagles win the Super Bowl in 2018 for the first time in their history. And if you look at 2010, you might say to yourself, well, gosh, the Phillies got to the finals and lost to the Blackhawks, and the Phillies were really good that season and lost to the Giants in the championship series.
Oh, yeah, that hurt.
But think about what you saw. A Phillies pitcher threw a no-hitter in a playoff game.
Yep.
And the Flyers came back from a 3-0 deficit in the second round to beat the Bruins.
Yeah.
Those are monumental events
in sports. You're
and
right. The Flyers being in the final that year was a little bit of a shocker.
It was. It was.
And the finals were disappointing. The way the finals ended with stinking Leighton. God, I still hate that guy.
Yeah, not good.
Never liked that guy.
They lost to a better team, though. They did.
The Phillies, I thought, were going to win it again that year. The loss to San Francisco was very disappointing. Yes. But you're right. Sports was a blast.
It was. And, you know, you can sometimes lament what you don't have and miss what you did get to experience.
Yeah.
And those are two pretty cool things.
Anyway, boy, Halliday was so good. He was.
Yeah.
Those
two seasons, 2010 and 2011, man. And you think about that game he pitched in 2011 against the Cardinals, where he allows the first inning run in Game 5 and shuts them down the rest of the way and walks off the mound the losing pitcher. Anyway.
Rafael Furcal. First inning.
I wish all of you listening could see the face that Glenn just made.
That hurt. And by the way, what would he go? 260, 270 innings a year?
Yes.
Right?
Yeah. The last real
double
horse.
Digit. His complete games per season are now, I heard this recently. Do me a favor. Look up how many complete games there have been in the major leagues this year.
Okay. I will.
Because it is possible that he had more in a season than like an entire league has these days.
I'm looking it up as we speak.
Tell you what, I'll take a call while you look that up.
Okay.
It's our friend Mitchy Tools. Let us get Mitch. How you doing?
Good, gentlemen. I got to keep calling you every week. They're winning every week, and I love them tomorrow afternoon too, the Eagles.
Yeah, I feel good about it.
I tell you guys, it was almost like an old school game. 9 sacks we had. I mean, you know, we don't have to say anything bad about Rich Gannon anymore. My God, it just.
I think Jonathan Gannon.
Are you talking about Jonathan Gannon?
Jonathan Gannon.
That's right. I did the same thing earlier. It's a natural mistake to make. Delaware County guy.
You know, I just, you know, wow. I mean, you know, but question. I mean, I don't want Hurts to run. If we keep getting these W's, he's got to just cool down a little bit. I've got to keep him healthy. That's the only thing in the back of my mind I'm thinking about, you know.
Boy, you'd need something to worry about, don't you?
Yeah.
Always have to have something to worry about with you. Yeah.
Yeah, look, I mean, Hurts running is such a weapon that you're not gonna see him not run. You're just not.
Yeah, and the way he does it, too, it's so effortless and like a butterfly, you know, just flying over these opponents and stuff like that, you know. Happy New Year, too.
Yes, thank you, Mitch. Same to you.
Thank you.
So, Bye, buddy. Be well.
I've got the numbers here. Halliday actually didn't throw more than... This sounds crazy. 9 complete games in any one season.
Is that right? He never reached double digit?
No. And so 2020, which was the shortened season because of the pandemic, each team playing 60 games, there were still 14 complete games.
Then my whole thing. Then this year there's got to be more than that.
Yeah, 20, but no, I 20, mean... you're
35, sorry, by my count.
Yes.
35 this year. All right, how many do the Phillies have?
Oh, do they?
Two?
Have?
Three?
Noah Syndergaard has one. I do know that, but that's a phony one.
That was a shortened game.
Yeah, because of the 5 innings.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Let me see here.
Nola's got one.
Yeah, no.
Nick Pavetta's got one.
Is that right?
Are we allowed to utter his name anymore?
Well.
No, he's got one for the Red Sox?
Right, yeah.
Man, I've been watching him.
So here you go.
Recently.
The Phillies have 2 complete games all season, both by Aaron Nola.
Yeah, and then the one by Syndergaard, which is fake.
Yeah. Yes.
All right, well, there you go.
So, yeah, look, to me.
Nonetheless, I miss Halliday.
I miss Halliday, and I miss that element of the sport. That is something that baseball is missing.
And I believe in the next segment, we may be talking about that.
Sounds good to me.
That's a pretty good tease, because we're going to be doing what we're watching and some of that relates to it. 215-592-9494. Check in with Mike Sealskin and Glenn Mack now on 94 WIP. Hey, when you bring up banking, most business people roll their eyes. I get it. I can tell you Meridian Bank customers do not feel that way. Yeah, sure. Meridian business bankers, they do the loan thing. They offer guidance on making your business more successful. But Meridian also puts on great customer events. I've been to them, both educational and social. And they're a super group of people to be around. You want to put some fun in your business banking? Get started at meridianbanker.com.